4341-790-266-4862, brasstax@starcomnetwork.net, the way you can reach us. Good morning to you. This is the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. John Stout is taking care of things technical, and he'll answer your calls and put you through to me. I'm the host, Dennis Johnson. I'll be with you until 2 this afternoon. It is a Tuesday, so we'll have the usual breaks that we have. The regional roundup, the track, the latest, the network news from Flo, and of course, the latest, the lunchtime edition at 12:30. That's our major breaks. We break, of course, for commercials throughout the course of the program. Whatever's on your mind, we open to discussing it. Once it stays within the parameters established by the station. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Something I heard many years ago, and over the passage of time, I've come to believe that it is true. Whether it is a political party or a commercial bank, whether it's a radio station or whether it's a sporting organization. Yesterday, October 19th, a day that resonates because of abuses of power and, well, the collapse of a regime, one that I sometimes try to avoid, but with the passage of time, the thoughts and the memories haven't receded at all. As a matter of fact, as I view the happenings today, especially in the political arena, some of the lessons that should have been learnt seems not to have been learnt. One of the first lessons I think October 19th taught me, all back then, was that you can't lead a people unless they want to be led by you. Those last two words are the most important, by you. The other thing that seems not to have been learned is no matter how many times you invoke the name of a deceased leader, no matter how popular that deceased leader was or perhaps even continues to be, it does not guarantee political success. There's an organization in Grenada that has changed its name from all sorts of things, from the Morris Bishop Patriotic Movement to other things, that have not had political success. And that's why I said invoking the name of a deceased leader does not necessarily lead to political success. And if you can't understand why, refer to rule number one, which is people will not be led unless they want to be led by you. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how it go?
I ain't as good as I should be, but I'm holding on.
I know. You know, you learn anybody else so how it go, you should some doubt is already.
Boy, there are times when the spirit is willing, but the flesh, they tell me, is weak. So I acknowledge my weaknesses.
Me too. I guess that's what makes us men. I mean, so that's what I mean. Anybody who can acknowledge the fact that they're wrong. Because as I told someone recently, if not for that piece of plastic, but at least you will know what it is to be an adult. And to be an adult is may your poor because it ain't everything that you're wrong that you realize that you're wrong. I can be the one to ask you that to that. Right? And you know what I mean when they hold the stance, they're calling it until I'm proven wrong. And not once I am proven wrong, I apologize.
What's on your mind this morning?
Oh, you remember when the people were being recited from Hamilton to Clapham?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember.
How they resisted?
Some did.
Right.
Some were happy to go.
Well, I often wonder where is that Barbados always resisting? If you had to go out there and tell them, look, a mistake was made with Leo 39. The real owner no come forward, so y'all got to go back. You don't feel that want to go back? This thing with White Hill. And I know what I'm talking about. I know I saw it for a fan. I was involved, not a big boy. I wasn't any big boy in the ministry, but I was involved. And I saw it. I remember the billboards placed all over the hill. Big white background, big red letters. And it read, absolutely no construction whatsoever by Auditorium Country Planning Department. Farmers was created for the relocation of residents of Wales. Now, I don't know who was offered or who wasn't offered. But I know, because I heard it, a lot of them refused to go.
Yeah.
And now they're complaining that they have been abandoned. I remember a politician coming on the radio. There were two sisters who used to complain bitterly that the last administration earlier did nothing to assist them. And the person who was seeking to represent the constituency came and said publicly that a house was there for them, fully furnished, and they said they're leaving. And then asked why they're not leaving, she said, the representative tell her don't move. After this day, nobody can come and say that person was wrong.
But sir, here's the challenge that you face, right? And here's the challenge that a lot of people who attempt to either support or prosecute those who make those decisions. It's this. People are free to make up their minds. As I said at the start of the program, you can't lead people unless they want to be led by you. And I underlined it by you. And it's interesting that you've started along this line. Because there are people who will do what they think is right. There are people who will do what they believe will lead to improvement in their circumstances. And there are other people who will sit down and wait on those who they believe in politically to tell them what to do, even if it turns out to be to their detriment. So here are the three people you have to try to deal with. You have to determine those who want to be led. You have to determine those who are comfortable where they are. And you have to determine who it is who will listen to the voice of reason. Sir, you're rehashing what has happened to people, what they have not done, how they feel abandoned, not going to change any of the things that affect the people who sit there and wait on the voice that they want to follow to tell them to move. As you pointed out, the same thing happened with people who were at Emerton. Some were happy to be out of the mess. There were others who said, this is where my neighbors spring bury. I born here, I got dead here. But sir, there is the problem with areas like that, right, has always been a case of enforcement. If you say there is to be no construction, and then you blink and wink and turn your eye to construction that's taking place, you're going to find yourself in the same situation. Because all the other plans will be put on hold or suspended because you said no further construction, we're moving everybody out.
Full stop. And then people move in now and were allowed to settle when they should have been disrupted, everything. Now, everyone told us the idiot, but I used to play cricket, not have baby.
Sir, don't go there. Have a good one.
I'm moving on.
Take care. Have a good one. Leave it, you know. Fellas, it's like stirring up ants' nests and then walking away from it. Don't stir up the ants' nests. Just walk over it and go along. Life is difficult at times. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hey, good morning, Glenn.
Hi, this is Glenn Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to speak on the whole question of the verbal blunders by politicians. I'm not dealing with the current situation. I'm just trying to put it in historical, political, and sociological context.
There is one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're contacts. If you know, the history of it is that these are nothing new to Barbados, right? But and maybe the younger generation who are not accustomed to it will be shocked and disappointed and all kind of strong reactions to it. But let me tell you, from analyzing them, from those perspectives that you mentioned, what I found is that all the gaffes that I can recall, all the verbal blunders, missteps, or whatever you might want to call them, have been made by the better educated persons who spoke. They were not anybody who caught off the street, a grassroots man to speak on the platform, and they went down that route. People who are highly educated, well educated, who are experienced too, invariably, and also, but what I found is that they were made in the heat of feeling the oats, who, you know, they're sharing licks. A former hubris and arrogance, and they went overboard. So, I thought that was significant. That none of the people who made those the gaffes that I even made reference to, there were three or four of them, were people who were off the street and should not have known better. These are people who were knowing better, should have known better, but did not for those same emotional political reasons or whatnot. The first I recall is in 1976, in the Suffolk North by-election, between David Simmons for the BLP, no Sir David, and the late Sir Ward Franklin for the Democratic Labour Party. And there was a speech being made at Church Village by the late Sir Frederick Smith. Again, a veteran, a well-educated man, a judge, et cetera, et cetera. And there was a proposal being made by the Barbados Labour Party program. And his response left it, his choice of words in the heat left it to the possibility and the ability of his opponents in the BLP to say, he referred to what they'd want to sort of think the people in Church Village idiots. Village idiot. And that term was taken and used against him, but of course by his opponents considerably. The other one was also by Sir Frederick Smith in the city by election that same year, in the city that was won by Billy Miller against Lyle Carmichael. When the BLP proposed that there be a college in the city to bring life and educate the city people, and the question was asked, where are you going to put that college? City Monkeys? And again, that was used to a disadvantage by Mr. Smith and his supporters on the platform or whatnot. But then the most outstanding one of all, believe it or not, was by no less a person than most excellent Earl Walton Barrow, former Prime Minister, again, a well-educated man. And this was the by-election when David Simmons replaced Tom Adams, who died that same year. David Simmons ran against Junior Rock, Mr. Barrow, to all intents, I was there myself, not provoked by any particular, but proceeded to indulge in a very harsh castigation of our BLP supporters, men and women, in which he saw it described that you could tell them by their attire. You could tell the various Labour Party men supporters called all the way along old fisherman pants and a fat hat on the ground and the waist tie up. Of the women, he said that they had walked with a curls in their hair and slipped up on their foot. I mean, it was unbelievable. What I remember it for is that the next day, the day after, the Barbados Labour Party had reduced those words to print and circulated them all over St. Thomas and whatnot. And that was won by Simmons. The question must be asked in these instances, what impact did these comments have any on the outcome of the elections? Did it really give the victims or the opponents any sympathy, or was it something that was just titillation and entertainment for a length of time, but did not have any enduring value to make the change for the money one way or the other? So that's the context in which I'm seeking to put it. You know, and therefore, I think this is something that we have to get. Of course, people, I'm sure, will regret, and the opponents will use it, because the idea of in politics, in a campaign, you look for those kind of things to be said or done by somebody, by your opponent, which you can then see to capitalize on. Because you want to throw them off message. You want to make them lose momentum. You want to make them put them more defensive. Make them lose confidence. And so, you know, it has an advantage for a while, I guess a disadvantage. So the question is then is how far will this go? How far will it be allowed to go? Of course, the opponents of Mr. Bradshaw will seek to drag it out as long as possible, and the proponents of Mr. Reefer. But then now the question of what enduring value, if any, would they have? But the last one I wanted to mention was more recent times, but I'm sure everybody would remember the infamous 1,000 pounds of blubber statement. So these things are part of the political life. They're not as common as people think, but they have happened over the years.
Let me ask you this question, though, Glenn. Since you put it into that political perspective, there are a couple of things that have come to mind throughout this entire episode for me, and it's this. One, what exactly is the purpose driving campaigns for political office? Because when I sit and listen to the trivia, in my opinion, that becomes the big issue, I feel sorry for the people who are looking for representation. Because through all this to-ing and fro-ing and backward and forward and calls to brass tacks and messages circulating on social media and people cussing one another in the press, I feel sorry for the people of St. George North. Because what their concerns are, after all the canvassing, I've not heard much about it. What are some, I mean, outside of the national thing that people talk about, unemployment and crime and, you know, youth violence, that is national issues. But the specific concerns of the people of that particular constituency seems lost in the fun that is going on. So my question is, are we seeking to glorify the political leadership? Are we seeking to vilify the individuals? What is the objective of some of all of this? Now, you talked about persons whose names are well known in Barbadian political history. The right excellent Earl Walton Barrow. You have Sir James Cameron Tudor. You have other names that have been called. Sir David Simmons, certainly well known in not only political or legal circles. Here's my thing. Jokes on political platform, one thing. Pekong across every single Caribbean island, it happens. Gaffes on political platforms, yes. But here's the thing, that the underlying thing that gets to me every single time about politics is this. Eric Williams, in his exuberance, declared, "Magnus est PNM, lay prevailabit. Great is the PNM, it will prevail." Saying that this party has a philosophy and a following, and it's an institution that regardless of who leads it, it will prevail. But throughout the Caribbean, this is what I've noticed, that takes second place to the personalities leading. So you have still running for political office for about the fifth or sixth time, Ralph Gonzalez in St. Vincent, the Prime Minister Grenada, who has been there for at least four terms with all the seats at his disposal. People focused around Barrow and continue to call his name long after his death. David Thompson was seen as the heir apparent. He didn't last long. You had going with Owen, still going with Owen. Owen no more than ever. And when he left, you know, what next? So now it's Mia Motley. Parties seem to crystallize behind names and project those names as being the reason why you follow, as opposed to this candidate is who can do this much for you incorporated into this greater plan. And to me, that's the downfall of our political structure. That's why people are turned off. You look at even the United States, where you have a party that's saying, well, until this leader, it was that kind of party. Now it moves to the left. Now it moves to the right. Now it's over the edge. What people are asking for, what they're crying out for, what I heard on Sunday when people call here crying out, is for representation, for someone to say, I am going to lead your charge. I am going to take the things that you say are wrong, I'm going to fix it. Rather than saying, you know, I have it all, just come to me and eventually I'll get wrong to you. I don't see how anybody wins in this battle.
All right, Dennis? Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I just sprouted for a bit.
You got it off your chest. Okay. No, I think part of the problem is if you don't go, certainly in my days when I was involved in political campaigns and planning them and executing them or whatnot, it was a question of having a plan and a planned message. Right? What message you want to get out on that night or for the duration of the campaign. But it's invariably as people, and it used to be at one time where you sit down and actually allocate areas of responsibility and speech for the persons who are on the platform. So people just don't go in there, repeat themselves, go in there, irrelevancies, do anything embarrassing. So it has to be a structure and organized and whatnot. I mean, you weren't writing the speeches for them, but you were telling the areas to focus on, you know, the policy, etc., blah, blah, blah. And that gives some structure and focus, and that minimizes the opportunity for people to indulge in great solo acts of political theater where they think they're entertaining and they get carried away themselves and they lose focus. Well, the question of leadership, The thing is that every organization, human beings have to have a leader. Whether it's in a church, a school, there has to be a leader. Somebody has to be in charge. But if we teach leader, and there's a hierarchy, we teach leader, there's a role, a status, their functions, etc., their benefits. There must be a leader. And you need a personification of a philosophy or a party. Mm-hmm. That's why you have Stalin and Lenin and FDR. They must be Churchill, etc. They stand for, they're personifying a human representation of what the message is, what the program is, what the country is at one time or another. Mm-hmm. The thing is that leadership has to be one which is available and open to other ideas, other influences from themselves, not just become a cult of personality where it's the maximum leader, nobody else cares. But for example, one of the things that I found was very interesting in the last campaign, the 2018 campaign, I understand there were instructions, really constant references in every speech where every member on the platform had to make a reference to the no president, prime minister.
The leader of the other party.
I mean, it has to happen in the. No, I don't mean. I don't mean criticizing that. I mean, making reference, invoking the name then in a speech.
I understand.
And the instruction was 15 times a night, 15 times in every speech. Right? it used to happen in the House of Assembly for the last 2 years or so, but it is not as prevalent now as before. And I cannot recall an equivalent.
In any campaign.
I followed politics for the year of the Grand Ali Allen 51. Mm. And it went to my first meeting in French of Grace School, the adult suffrage. But neither Adams nor Barra nor the other Adams, Sandy Furt, the Dems used to make reference to Barrow in time. And I think that was a mistake because they never allowed to go beyond reformulating themselves and come with fresh ideas. But that being the fact, it wasn't that you were required or expected to make constant invocation of the leader's name and status of performance. And what it does is it prevents the person from establishing their own credibility, their own role, their own performance. And it makes it seem as though there's only one person that matters. Mm-hmm. And it is not good for a human society for that to come up, whether it's church or chapel.
Okay, sir. Thanks for your comments, Glenn. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Dennis. Good
morning, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm trying to be good.
But I see you're batting with precision just now. You're making a mistake.
I get beat up whenever I slip, so I try not to.
I know, you man. You want to think about you, you know where to duck. You know where to pull your back.
I still get hit sometimes.
Now, I really want to get into this whole thing that was raised yesterday on the program pertaining to what you were considering, whether or not the election in St. George is at a low key or at a high key. But from my own participating in St. George, and these mammoth crowds from both sides, to me, it means nothing. You hear what I say? Glenn, when it was with Glenn, we kept meeting in Market Hill. You couldn't even get 40 people. That general election here. You went to the Flat Rock, you couldn't get 25. That night, Marcel Callis, Sport, St. Kilbert, myself, Glenn, and they think it was Nigel Whitehall. Now, Miss Callis spoke there because her father come from Flat Rock. Good? Now, what I am actually saying now, that having massive crowds and not electorate city campaign, it makes sense. The people in St. George right now, I believe they already have made up their mind and they would know what they want to do. But what I want to do this morning is to touch on two things, COVID and the sewage tax. I don't know which one you want me to deal with first.
You take your pick.
Yeah. Now, my observation about COVID, I understand this, but I like you, we invent in a big university, but they're saying in common sense. Have you ever had any knowledge of a common breed fowl hatching chickens?
I'm trying to recall. I know what you call a common breed fowl. No, the reason why I'm trying to remember is because I grew up in a house that used to have chickens, but I didn't know whether they're common breed or not, but no, they used to hatch.
You call them common breed, that means even 6 weeks chickens. We had to keep the fowl, the hens and the cocks in order to reproduce.
Correct.
Right, so the hen would sit down on
the eggs.
Yeah,
one cock had about six hens, and yes.
Right.
They would sit on them and hatch.
On the eggs, and it had to create a certain amount of heat in order to get the eggs first.
Yes, sir.
Hatch, right?
Yes, sir.
Even in pigeons, raising pigeons, we used to watch the pigeons sit down on the eggs for a long time. Right. Now, let me bring you right back to COVID. COVID, people that start talking about the mask, in places like England and Canada, whenever you see the TV showing the people up there walking the street, they all have the mask. But I am saying this, that this problem or this virus seems to be going on at a rampant pace in cold climates. Then it get into, and you would recognize that most Barbadians, the Barbadian family, don't carry it. But if people coming from overseas, you will see that they bring it in and then they got to be quarantined and such like. But if you leave it for the climatic conditions in Barbados, it seems that it do not survive. It would not come here because when birds, according to certain weather, they migrate. They leave that country because of the coldness and they will fly down to the Caribbean. And I said that the virus is similar to that. So we be here saying that we battling the COVID and we doing it right. But whether we're doing it right or not, look and see the statistics will show you that whatever happened with COVID is brought into Barbados and not people of themselves. Like when we were going to school, we would have a vaccination for measles and such like. And that is way up in England now. And Trump, they are coping instead of get some sort of thing to what you call it, man. My brain going nowhere.
This is I tell you.
Yeah. To combat the virus. So what we call an injection or you care
a vaccination.
What we talk about. Now, that is enough for that. And anybody who understands what I'm saying, I like to be very sharp, but understand what I just said. Now, I want to look at the sewage tax. In these hard times in Barbados, where there's a lot of people who are not working. That sewage tax was introduced to assist in the project of clearing the sewage off the road. And then it said it would extend to bringing in the sanitation trucks. Now, the project at St. Lawrence, I would believe that it is permanently put to a stop because we have seen success and we have brought in the trucks. Why it is at this point in time, I'm not hearing the politicians on behalf of the poor people, even in St. George, asking to remove the sewage tax off the taxpayers, especially those people in St. George who don't have any sewage attached to the sewage system. Why they should be paying that tax all in them. That's all they have to say for the day. And Dennis, continue and let God give you your blessings.
I will try my best, sir. Thank you very much. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello.
Hello, good morning, sir.
Hi, morning.
Yes, sir. I live in St. Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a problem down here with Waterworks. I think that if Waterworks cannot do Barbados work, they should employ subcontractors or whatever to help with this situation. Why I'm saying that there, this is 3 weeks now. The main was running in Carbon's Village, Lakes, in Andrew. And they also have a next line that burst. A truck went up here, and he looked at it, and he said he don't have the job letter for it. He don't have the job sheet for it, so he can't do anything about it. He leaves. This water is traveling from Carbon's Village out to the East Coast and running in the gutter out there. This St. Andrew, as you call it in the Scotland area, we have a lot of slippage. We get the water from St. Thomas, coming down Sturgis, coming back, right back down to St. Andrew, coming to Lakes Bridge and all of that. If you including Waterworks, letting a pipe, a main, run for 3 weeks, going into 4 weeks, that water is going to saturate some settling, causing mosquitoes and all kinds of things. I think that Waterworks should look into this. If they cannot have them workers to do it, call in subtractors and pay them you call a supervisor will come and look at a berth and he will go back and nobody ain't coming in 3 weeks. Head into a month, you got a man that's sending water from Carbon's Village to the East Coast and running in the drain out there, running upon the main road, mashing up the little road because that you know the water gonna saturate and go up on the cracks in the road and make the road worse. And nobody ain't looking into it.
So I don't know how the Barbados Water Authority operates. I don't know how they assign the workmen. I don't know how they prioritize the jobs and the problems that are brought to their attention. We hear the complaints on radio regularly. We have had occasions when the persons responsible for public relations and they would come and they would say, well, we've heard this problem, we're working on that problem, this is what it is. I don't know how much of it is financing. See, it's easy for you and for me too to say, look, if they don't have enough people there employed, as you say, hire some subcontractors. When I, you know, if you ask the question, then they say, well, we can't hire subcontractors just so we got to pay them money, we don't have it, and you get the excuses. So water is a precious resource.
We are asked
to conserve at every turn and corner. Yes, it's been raining recently, but even the experts say it's not enough to bring us back to where we want to be. Therefore, I would think that it is important that the appearance, notice I'm using the term appearance, of not paying attention to burst mains, water flowing in the road, examples of wastage are dealt with quickly. So that we, the personnel, the population, who being asked to conserve, will believe that we all in this fight together, and they're conserving, so we can help them by conserving. But if we catch in water, and we can't get water regularly, and then we see it flowing outside, and we bring it to the attention of somebody, and they ain't paying no mind, so we got some issues to deal with.
You see, it's not crossing you, sir. Not crossing you. I I work in government for 40-something years.
Oh, well, then you would have some idea how it works.
I was a tractor driver.
Okay.
I work in White Hill, and I cut White Hill Road.
Mm-hmm.
And when we discovered they had a pipe in the construction where we was cutting was leaking for years. And being in Scotland area, that pulled the whole road. Yeah. So when people would think that White Hill Road just slipped just so, you had water leakage and White Hill on the ground where it's a main leaking. So when that main where that main leak and it go down, it saturated, it can saturate the earth underneath all the time, and it's going to pull the hill. So when you get water, be glad for the rain, but still you get a main running, then you got a next extra pipe running, and then you can get a waterworks truck come up here, and he can look at it, and you say, oh, you come to fix. No, we have to jump
into that. I've asked about that already. I've asked why can't they repair it if they have the means of doing so and add it to the job sheet, perhaps signed by two of the residents in the area to confirm that this was done, so that, you know, they don't feel that they put a fake job on the sheet.
Okay.
Right? I mean, in today's environment where everybody carrying cell phones, you take a picture of it.
That's
when
right.
It damaged, you take a picture of it repaired. You have two of the residents sign the bottom of the job sheet saying, so-and-so came here. These fellas work from 2 to 4 o'clock. Look, the job finished. And you go back with it. You know,
but you see what's happening. What happened as an operator with me, when I go there to work and they send me to do a job and I see trees opposite the other side that will cause danger to someone that walking, I push it down.
Right.
But normally these people nowadays, if they come and see something and them and address it, they're going to leave it. And that is wrong. You got to help you boss
it. It depends on the rules. It depends on the rules you're working under. Because, you know, as I said, I don't know the rules they're operating under, so I kind of talking in the dark. But thanks for bringing it to the attention again. Hopefully now you'll get some action on it. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Mr. Johnson.
Sir.
Pleasant day to you.
To you too, sir.
God's blessings. Mr. Johnson, I'm going to talk about some things I've observed, and I know that you'll have an input. I consider them to be very, very important to Barbados at the moment. Somewhere along the line, the population across the United States, there are more people died from COVID in the United States than the population of Barbados. I think I said that in the last stats yesterday. I'm saying that to say this. Barbadians seem not to relate to the seriousness of the instructions of the mask wearing and the distance. What I've observed that makes me say this, and I'm drawing this to the attention of the media because the media can help, that is the print media, the electronic media, and the television, where these things are happening daily, and they expose that as no use of the mask, and also the idea of the distance. Mr. Johnson, I've observed that in this day and age, you can take a policeman off the job and put him to stand up on River Road with binoculars to spy into the transport authority shed over there. Then in truth of fact, that says nothing, because there's several buildings in that area that you could put up a CCTV camera, and chances are that they will do the work in one day. They will take the binoculars to do it in probably a couple of days. I'm also saying that since that authority is covered by security and police, that nobody should be leaving that van stand without a mask on, because there's a gate check by the police, and there's a gate check by security. Also, at the top of the road, John Beckers Drive, there's a stop where vehicles have to come onto the traffic, and a check could be there. So obviously, if somebody is in the van or want to travel in the van without a mask, the position is there, two points that person could be taken off the van, or that person by right knows that they're creating an offense, and solve the problem. I also believe that if you give what you consider to be a ticket to that person as a warning, there's a possibility that the awareness that, look, you must wear your mask, or in advance time, you must have distance as required. But what is really happening is that you've got a situation where the very security guards that are working in these establishments have friends. The van drivers and the conductors have friends. And since they've got friends, there's a possibility that something will slip. I think we need to stop this so that something will not slip to the detriment of many, many Barbadians. I come now to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. Mr. Johnson, I'm very concerned. There is a new security company now functioning at the security at the hospital. Very comfortable at the moment. But there are some systems at the front of the hospital that I believe was overlooked. That is that those persons who go to the hospital for the pharmacy must await a ticket given on the outside by one of those security personnel. Vice versa for several outpatient departments within the hospital. I'm saying that on a scale of 1 to 2, that person should be identifiable. There are 4 or 5 chairs there, Mr. Johnson, in the front there where they're sitting. And to get a ticket, you have to ask, and then somebody will point you to the man sitting there in that chair to get that ticket for you to go through, sanitize, and go to your department. I think that that person who is responsible for giving those tickets should be identified in the sense that the person only have to collect a ticket. Is a good day, how, what it may be. And is at that point also that that person can tell the person who's collecting that ticket, where's your mask? Where's your mask? You need to get your mask out. Put on your mask before you get to the door. I'm saying that this is something that should be looked at in terms of the spread of the virus. Then you come to the Blackwell Polyclinic. On a daily basis, there's something wrong at that clinic. I don't see why some person should have to go to that clinic as far as 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30, and still 2 to 2:30. 2 to 30, they're at that clinic waiting to be seen and to be examined. Something is not functioning well at that clinic, and as a result of this, there's a backlog of service for the patient. I'm saying these things because these things are necessary in order we cannot continue to take chances. Another thing I'm going to make a comment of, when I go to the hospital, I like to sit down on the outside. I like to watch because it gives you an idea of those persons who you know who are not well and those persons who are well. But on the outside of the hospital, way up to the front, there is an ambulance there. The ambulance from Glendary frequents that bear by dropping off patients off and on. I don't see why people should be allowed to assemble in that area. If you have such a security situation of people coming from Glendary, inmates coming from Glendary for treatment, nobody should be allowed to sit on those two benches in that area. I'm also of the opinion that I've been going to the hospital for years and I've never seen a police doing duty on the outside of the hospital at any time. So serious as it is, there may be a movement of the police vehicle, but in terms of a stationary police, I think this time has come that with these changing days, changing years, something like that should be looked at, where nobody should be able to occupy that, those two benches up there, because those two benches are within the area of the ambulance, police ambulance, and also the ambulance from Her Majesty's prison. And that the inmates should be able to, as they walk out, kind of a security control. A security control, but these things have been overlooked. I think it's time that these people sit down around the table and make sure that these things are put in place. And one, that is the COVID situation with the outside patients there, and also the situation with Bramford Tate. Bramford Tate,
Polyclinic.
Right, and I'm saying this because we are taking advantage of what we can consider to be the smile and grace of prayers.
Okay, sir. Thank you for your contribution. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Contribution. contribution. Exactly what has that guy contributed? Seriously. I mean, for 3 or 4 minutes, he has contributed absolutely nothing.
Sir, and Mark, in your 30 seconds, you have done neither.
Answer me, Mark.
Sir, in your 30 seconds, you have done the same thing.
When people come to Barbados, they're quarantined for 2 weeks. Why 2 weeks? Maybe you can answer me.
Sir, they are not quarantined for 2 weeks.
Oh, they're not? Okay.
No, they're not. You need to keep abreast of the protocols.
So what's the protocol then? Two days?
Sir, the last protocol I saw, depending on where the person has come from, protocol, the quarantine period sometimes 5 days, and they get tested twice in 5 days. If they're both negative, they're released. It depends on what the current protocols are.
Right. Okay.
You read them and
so
you come up to date on them.
You say 5 days then.
Sir, I said, you know, you need to learn to listen and not snap bits and pieces up. I said, depending on where the person is coming from, there are different areas. Areas that are high risk, medium risk, low risk. There are different areas and different protocols.
That is all well and good. So we got people from British Airways and they are going to be quarantined for 2 weeks. Is that not the case in this case?
I don't know, sir. It depends on if it's high risk or not.
The guys from British Airways are going to be quarantined for 2 weeks. Why 5 days? Why 2 weeks? Why even a month? Why is there a quarantine period with a specific time period?
Because of the length of time it takes, sir, to get the test to come back negative, whether the person came in pre-tested or not. So there are guidelines that have to be followed to determine your quarantine period.
Right. So when you get over your determination to talk me down, I will lick that.
I am not talking you down, sir. I am explaining to you something that you seem to be missing.
Necessarily so, because quite frankly, I was trying to ask questions that were rhetorical, but you decided you're going to respond anyhow and use the opportunity to talk me down.
Sir, because the things you're saying are incorrect. My job is to have a conversation. Your job is to say what you want to say, regardless of what the facts are.
There are periods of time that are allocated to demonstrate the fact that this virus, or whatever you call it, you know, has a shelf life. Basically, that's what it has, a shelf life. It stays in your body for a certain amount of time, and it goes. And you have to be tested, maybe 5 days, maybe 2 weeks. You know, you're positive now, negative next time. It doesn't stay in your body forever. We went through this program where we shut down for a whole month. Everybody had to stay home for a whole month and then some. Because they wanted to make sure that that period had passed. If that virus is in Barbados, you had a whole month to get the hell to rid of it. A whole month. That was back in February or March. So maybe no. Maybe no. And the argument then, as no longer the in argument no more, was we have to flatten the curve. I'm not quite sure what the curve was. Probably was some kind of measurement of as to the spread, the virulence of this particular sickness. But surely, after all of these months, that curve has been flattened. There's no more conversation about flattening a curve, apparently. They've gone quiet. In fact, you're not even getting a conversation anymore as to the amount of tests that were done in Barbados and the amount of cases that have been found. Because if that information was brought to the public, it will be blatantly clear that the virus does not exist. You don't hear Mark talking foolishness. The virus does not exist in Barbados outside of quarantine. But it is clear. It is obvious. And I do not understand why you have people standing up on the sidewalk and people calling up on a program like Mark Smart trying to tell people, oh, social distance, and wear a mask, and oh, we have to be cautious, and this thing is out there, and it's going to kill people. This is nonsense. You know what's out there? Dengue. Dengue out there. Huh? We got the flu coming up, and there's absolutely no screening for the flu. And the flu will kill people too. It will kill more people than this particular virus that people are so scared of. Oh, it's a killer virus. And give me a break, man. I am tired of scare tactics. The virus does not exist in Barbados. It does not. And you know, and after I made this call, somebody's got calling, as I was the case last week. You sound real reasonable and logical, and you sound so sweet. I tried to explain to people, oh, the numbers are about 1,000, all kind of fancy thing. He was not going to give you information as the amount of people that died of cancer this week alone. Nuff! He's not going to give you the amount of people that got hypertension in Barbados and would die as a result of related ailments. Nuff!
You know, again, for the sake of my sanity and yours, I need to intervene. Cancer is not contagious. I can't give it to you. Neither is hypertension. Sir, take your tablets, relax, and have a good day. Because you're going to die from hypertension and screaming. and I will be told I am the cause of it because I allow you to do it. Sir, you've made your point. Have a good day. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello? 434-1790, Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right.
Well, I hope you're using the three W's. Wash, wear, and watch. Wash your hands, wear your mask, and watch your distance. I'm sure you're doing those three.
I might be breaking one of them.
It's not weak walk of the world.
I might be breaking one of them.
I'll try. Three. Now, you had an earlier call. You know, the thing about experts is, I understand, Frank Simmons growing up, that they know more and more about less and less. Then you can hear, it's my understanding that the virus originated in China. And when one looks at it, you had a call who's called a historian. You always talk about politics. And he's saying that people get what he's saying. That the climate in Barbados is one of the causes for us not to have the low incidence of the virus COVID-19. Now, has he ever gone to the United States in the summer?
Some places are over 100.
Over 100?
In some places.
Has he ever gone to Jamaica, where the virus is all up in 2,000 people by now? What happened to Suriname and Guyana? There are all tropical countries. What happened to the one that's going to have the election soon in out there? So in the country will even come back to me right now. But the point I'm making is that don't come and spout foolishness on the airwaves, because what he has to say is that the government of Barbados is doing a fantastic job to keep the virus down. Because if they don't have, we had two school children, for example, who picked up the virus from some source. But the people went into contact tracing. They had a man earlier in the process that didn't want to say what happened, how he contacted it. But the people got out there and did what they had to do and tried to calm it. So then anti-America and those people come in to spout foolishness that the virus is not here. It is that because the people in Barbados, the health authorities are doing a fine job of trying to control it. Because if they let people slip through the net, then you will see that the virus is in Barbados. But they're doing the right things. So far, so good.
So, now, and here's the challenge that I think we're faced with as a people. Whether or not you agree with the protocols, whether or not you agree with the decision to open the various ports, whether or not you agree with the classification of destinations as being high, medium, or low risk. The important thing is that when people are asked to quarantine, whether they opt to quarantine at the government facility or at a private facility, that the restrictions that are put in place are followed, right? Yeah. So when you have a company that was, as was sent to me this morning, advertising that you can get a test, pay $200 for it, you wait for 10 minutes, according to the person, and you get your test results back, so you could go and lounge by the pool and watch the sea while you quarantine. That's giving people the wrong impression. That's giving people that you have the authority to break the quarantine regulations that say you're supposed to stay in your room until the health authorities clear you. Because you went to a private facility, you got your test done for $200, so you here lounging by the pool. Now, unless you quarantine by the pool alone, right? Unless that's your quarantine area, it means like you're moving from one area to the other, which you're not supposed to do until you get clearance. And it is that type of information or misinformation or whatever it is that causes people to say, this system ain't working, so I'm not following it. And that is where we need to ensure that the hotels, the guest houses, wherever people are allowed to quarantine, that regulations are followed. Yes, because it is those cracks that will cause the problems.
If you don't obey the protocol, everything will spread. I can remember the president of the United States said that when the summer comes, that you think a walkway.
Heat, it will go like
Lord
a miracle.
Now, the other point I want to make is that I am not a believer of same-sex marriage. I am a believer in the Bible. And it says in the last days, and I don't know if the Christian people, some of the Christian apostles and whoever they call themselves, will read that part of the Bible. It says in the last days there shall be wars and rumors of wars, and men will love men. And it goes on and on and on. And therefore, that phenomenon is probably coming to pass, that you have murders and rumors of wars and all kinds of things. And that's happening all the time until the master puts in his appearance. So I think that they also need to read that part of the Bible, that there's certain things that must happen if you are a Christian-thinking person in terms of the Bible. If you like to read the Bible, they also have to read those things, that men should be lovers of men. And that is coming to pass. So therefore, I have to look at that. Now, let me switch now to the whole question of negotiations. There's a lot of talk on the radio, or the calling program, about negotiations and accepting 40% rather than accepting 23% and those kind of things. When a union goes into a negotiation, they have their research, people research lots of things. When was the last increase? What the economy looks like? The whole myriad of things are looked at prior to setting a figure, and then that goes. Then they go to the general counsel, the executive, and the executive look at it, and then they put it forward to people what they think they should go and ask for. It has nothing to do with the general secretary. The general secretary carries out the wishes of the council, and therefore, when they go to negotiate, as I know somebody who went sometimes before, you put your cards on the table, and therefore, you negotiate. You might get the government looks at their proposal on the table, the union put their proposal on the table, and you back and forth, and if you've got 23%, the government says, can I pay that, I can pay 10. But you must have something on the table to negotiate. So if you have a big zero on the table, that creates confusion. So therefore, you cannot blame the general secretary or any general secretary for saying that they put that thing on the table. It is that they have to carry the wishes of their members. So that is something that people must come to grips with when you're negotiating.
You think they don't?
So
look, you know, as someone who sits under the tree with my arms folded behind my head while the game progresses, right? It's not every time that I'll agree with the umpire. There's no time that I'll even agree with the spectators. But let me say this to you, right?
Right.
If you put 23% on the table and I say my proposal is naught and I am not moving from naught because naught is all I have, how are you going to negotiate, sir? But you can't negotiate. You've made an opening proposal. I have put mine, and I put conditions to mine. Well, if you want to sit down there and watch me, you could. But I tell you, I am zero. I can't afford more than zero. I am not moving from zero. Well, you got one or two options. Either come down to zero or left.
Right, that's how it works.
So I am well aware how it works. So what I'm saying to you is, anything other than that is just people making noise.
So
that's what it is. Look, listen. I remember hearing a union leader making a proposal to a government, and the person who was not involved in the negotiation was the prime minister at the time. So the negotiations were within the minister responsible and the union leader. And the union leader was threatening all sorts of action. And the prime minister of that particular country simply said to the union leader, I have the power to make you our permanent ambassador to some far-flung part of the world. And the man said nothing after that, you know, brother, nothing. Thereafter, he said the deputy, the assistant to the deputy. That leader never came back to the negotiated table. So there are ways to negotiate.
Yeah.
And sometimes, And sometimes you understand what the position is.
Man, I've been there, done that. Don't blame me.
I know. So I know you've been there, done that, which is why I chuckled when you brought it up. I thank you for your contributions, too.